session number 10413, rule 7.
Mr. George Self, Reel 7. During a confused action such as that arrow's counterattack and then the withdrawal, who actually controlled what was happening as far as you were concerned?
Well, the company commander, you know, you worked under your company commander, which was Captain Walton. And the prisoners that came back out of this arras do, we took them back to the crossroads. With us being in reserve, we took them back to the crossroads and handed them over to the French. I'll tell you why in a minute, why I'm telling you this story. Now, what the French did with them, one never knows. But they took over the job of the prisoners of war.
Now, these were the prisoners that were taken by the forward companies,
mm-hmm.
And not the ones that there were that the court that got involved
the
in trouble in the cemetery.
No, no, there were very few prisoners took out of there. As I say, the French tanks blew that place to bits. There were very few prisoners took out of there. There were some, but not very many.
But the prisoners generally were given to the French.
Mm-hmm.
So what would?
And their job was to see them back to HQ for interrogation. Now, I don't know whether you want to take this. Not so very long ago, maybe a year ago now, there was a man wrote a book about before France, before Dunkirk, and he accused 151 Brigade of deliberately murdering 400 prisoners of war. Have you heard about it? And those were the prisoners. And as I say, we handed them over to the French. What happened to them? I don't know.
But they were all right when you left them?
But they were all right when we left them.
And that's about how many there were, is it? 400?
I couldn't say how many there was. I wouldn't like to put a figure on how many there was. They would probably be from the 9th Battalion, which was on our right. All the prisoners all together. But as I say, as far as prisoners was concerned, being murdered by the Durhams, no way.
The only problem had been that little incident in the cemetery where mm-hmm. one of them had shot someone in the back and mm-hmm. there'd been a bit of return fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was natural. You weren't going to let him shoot nobody else. I suppose, if you put it to a finer point, they shouldn't have shot him, but he still had a weapon, so what do you do? Shoot first and ask questions after.
Now, half the battalion was trapped in Wallace, wasn't it? Where were you at that time?
In Wallace. I was in Wallace.
When you were surrounded?
Mm-hmm. C and D Company.
Can you tell me what exactly happened?
Well, we were fighting and eventually were surrounded. Nobody knew what was going on. Eventually, some tanks came and relieved us and we broke out. But as for the time we were there fighting,
do you remember any incidents from the fighting?
No, not particularly. Your you're looking after your own little area, what was going on anywhere else, you didn't know much about.
Who was telling you what to do? You were still your company commander?
The company commander, yes.
So all the command structures stayed intact as far as you were concerned. You still got your orders from your officers?
Mm-hmm. I've still got them from the officers or the senior NCOs, because the platoon sergeants, fate swelling, that's all. And you took the orders from there. We eventually broke out of there and rejoined the other two companies out of the battalion. I think that was at Vimy, wasn't it? Did we go back to Vimy there? Where we took up defensive positions at Vimy. Some of the our lads were in the old trenches. Near the Canadian monument. And I always remember there I had my company, there was a corporal called Freddie Draper. And on the French monument, on the Canadian monument, the first name on that monument was Corporal F. Draper of the Saskatchewan Rifles, I think it was. And Freddie said to me, "Well, see my name's on there." And it wasn't long after for his name, because he was killed not long, very long after that. And people used to kid about omens, and if he doesn't got me number on, I'm all right and all this business. Where we went from Vimy, I think it was at Vimy when we first heard make for the coast.
And who told you that? Where did that order come from? From the usual?
It came down the line. We went into a small town, Bethune, I think it was, from Vimy. I think it was Bethune. I know I slept that night in a nunnery. And I always remember it because there was a big chatty in the passageway in this nunnery, and it was full to the top of pickled eggs. And at that particular time, you're only getting food now and again. Yeah, I used to always carry a packet of hardtack biscuits, so I was never without.
The supply situation had broken down by then. Mm. When did it first?
Well, you were moving that fast, say, they could never catch up with you.
Had it caught up from the first march from Grammont, or was it disorganised from then on?
Battalion-wise, it wasn't disorganised. But from the RASC and the motorised unit, it was chaotic, because they would get an order to go somewhere and then it'd be changed to go somewhere else. And you were standing waiting here and nothing happened. And it was at Bethune where we raided this chatty of these eggs. And I went out in the square and the first words I heard that two trucks had took off to Boulogne. And while I was standing in the square talking about this, there was a fleet of ambulances came into the square. And one or two little 1500 weights with stretchers on. And I went over to see the wounded, see if I could do anything for them. And there were our B company that had been wounded in Arras when we'd gone over the line where the cemetery was. And I also remember one lad who was a friend of mine. He'd been at Bransmouth with me. Johnny Cranny, son Johnny Cranny, from Ledgate. And he'd been wounded in the leg, and it was green. And then we were told to fall in, and motorised. And I think we went down to a place called Dicky Bush. And we dug in.
Were the refugees more of a problem now?
Oh, aye, yes.
How did you cope with them? I mean, or how did the battalion...
Well, you just had to push through them. The roads were getting blocked. Yeah. And you just had to honk your horn and push through them. But at Dicky Bush, we got dug in and we were fired upon. And I had a Lance Corporal. Went berserk.
What had happened to him?
I was suffering from shell shock. And he was crying for his mother and was in a terrible bloody state.
How did you cope with him?
And I had to bring him out of the line and try and get him to the MI room. And I got him out of the line. It took two of us. He was helpless. It took two of us to drag him. And we got him to an ambulance. And just then all hell let loose. And we couldn't get back to where we'd come from.
What was happening?
Well, it was overrun. And so everybody then was looking after number one. You know, firing and then moving, firing and moving. And that night, a lorry came. And we were falling back. And told us to get on board. And he was an RASC officer. And he was, I asked the driver who the hell he was, like, and he was a Lord Morris, or supposed to be a Lord Morris. And so we got on this lorry, about 20 of us. But before we got on, we found out that our position, our company position, had been overrun, and those that weren't dead were already prisoners. So we didn't know, you know, we're on our own. So we got on this lorry and...
So you'd only avoided this because of this shell shock?
Mm-hmm. If lucky for me, I would have probably been in the bag or dead or whatever. And unfortunately, what happened, I don't know, but became light, we were back in Belgium. Well, Belgium had already capitulated then. So we had to turn round and come back. And then the order came that everybody made for Dunkirk. So we were put on foot, make your way back to Dunkirk the best way you can. And this RAC driver and this Lord Morris or whoever he was took off, left us. So we had to shank his pony.
So how many of the... You were just on your own now? With all
no, no, there was about 20 of us. And they were out of our companies because... You know, we'd been overrun. It took us quite a while to get back to Dunkirk when we run into the remnants of the battalion. And we were sent into a defensive position outside Dunkirk.
Whereabouts, do you know?
Oh, I couldn't tell you what they call it. But we had the guards came up with us, and then we fell back to the perimeter of Dunkirk, and then we were told to. We were going to be put on board ship, and somehow, what happened, I don't know. But I found myself with 10 men, and we couldn't find the battalion. And I always remember I had one of my own section there, a lad called Mitchell. And he was a Cockney. Or he lived in the London area. And he used to spend, before the war, a lot of time in France. And he could talk French. Any dialect, he could talk it. And eventually we got to along the Mole. And...
Were you very tired?
I'd had no sleep for 17 days then. Not what you could call a night's sleep. I'd had an odd hour.
And what effect did that
and
have?
And we'd had no meal for 11 days, just the iron rations and that.
What effect did the lack of sleep have on the way you thought and behaved?
Oh, well, you was... To use the expression, you were knackered.
Is this why things happened like losing the battalion and finding yourself just with 10 men?
Probably. Because, as I say, you were dropping asleep.
Was that affecting everybody?
Oh, yes. You were that tired. And we got on a trawler.
And what day was that, you think? What date?
I wouldn't like to say for sure. About the 1st of June. No. I think it was the last day of May.
And you got on from the Moles?
Mm-hmm.
And was it under fire at the time?
Hmm?
Was it under artillery fire?
Being bombed and that. And I also remember the Royal Marines were sitting along the Mall and along the beach, and their job was to stop people panicking. They had to shoot them.
Was there any sign of panic anywhere?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm saying yes. You know, a little boat would come in, a rowing boat, well, not a rowing boat, similar to a rowing boat, that would hold maybe 15 or 16 passengers. And of course, everybody used to run out and all try to get in that boat. And they sank a lot of boats through it. And so the Marines came along, and their order was to, if they saw anybody panic, shoot. And I always remember I was talking to the sergeant. In fact, he gave me a bar of chocolate, the iron ration, you know. He gave me a bar of chocolate. And I said to him, would you shoot? And he said to me, you try running at them. I'll show you whether I'll shoot. Whether they would or not, I don't know. But that was their orders, if anybody panicked.
You didn't see them open fire then?
Not while I was there.
Did you actually see this business of boats being sunk? Did you see that happening?
Oh, yes. Eventually we got along and we got on a trawler. And before you could get on, you had to sling your equipment and sling your rifle into the sea.
Who told you to do that?
The skipper of the trawler.
So there's no officer with you at all now?
There's no officer there then. And they wouldn't let you on if you unless you did. And this trawler was going to take us out to the Navy. And then we would transfer onto another boat. And we were given a cup of hot coffee as we went on. And I lay down on the deck and I fell asleep. And when I woke up, we were just coming into Ramsgate Harbour. And when we tied up, we were asked where our weapons were by the MPs. And the skipper said, I gave the order to throw them overboard so I could get more men on this boat than I would have done if everybody had the packs and rifles. And so it
that was accepted.
Right off. But everybody was questioned as they came ashore because you had Frenchmen on the boat. I was supposed to be looking for fifth columns and what had you. And we were taken to the railway station, put on a train, given a cup of tea and a bun and a packet of tabs. And I finished up in Cirencester. Is it Cirencester?
What was your morale like after all this? I mean, you'd been
very low, very low. To think that we'd been chased out out of France. At least mine was. I can only talk about myself. I can't talk about other people. A lot of people were bloody pleased to get back. We all thought we'd been let down.
Who by?
The top brass.
What? Galt and such?
Mm.
In what way? What do you think he could have done? Or what did you...
Well, they... To us, anyhow, they seemed to be fighting the 1418 war again. The Second World War was nothing like the First World War.
In what way? What were they doing?
Well, you're digging in these trenches with fire steps and fire bays and that. they were no good. The armament that the Germans had was far superior to ours.
In what way?
Well, we used to have a little 2-pound anti-tank gun. Used to be on little wheels, and you could pull it along. You know, the first German tank I ever saw one of them fired at, you know, just bouncing off. And I always remember a lad, still alive today, lives at Chesley Street. Ooh. Trying to think of his name now. But he was on the boys' anti-tank gun. And it was a heavy weapon. And he was a 6-foot man. And he carried this all over France. The first time he had the chance to fire it was at around Dunkirk area. At a tank. And he fired it. So I threw it over the hedge.
It bounced
the gun. Said, that's it. And our weapons, I've always said this, that we went to France with bows and arrows and sticks and stones compared to what the Germans had.
What was particularly good that the Germans had, do you think?
The weapons were superior to ours, the Mauser and the Spandau. The only good weapon we had was the Bren gun. The tanks, I mean, we used to hear stories when I was stationed down walking, where a bloke driving in Germany in an Austin, a baby Austin 7. Have you ever seen a baby Austin 7? Well, it's only about that big. And he'd hit this tank side on and come out the other side. And those daft buggers would believe in this. It was the propaganda that was going. And the warfare was different. It was open warfare, where in the First World War it was like a closed. I mean, you just have to go to Vimy Ridge and see the First World War trenches of the British and Canadian. And you can practically shake hands with the Germans in their trenches. And the Second World War was nothing like that. And we all felt let down by the top brass. We were never briefed enough.
What do you mean? What sort of thing weren't you told that you felt would have been valuable?
Well, told what we were expected to oppose us. You were never told anything like that. You know, you were told we're going here, digging defensive positions.
But you weren't told who might attack?
We weren't told what to expect. You know, tank corps, infantry, paratroopers. You never got any information like that. And, mind, to be fair about that, that went on for a long, long time. The orders, they did realise towards later on that instead of just briefing the senior NCOs, it's time they briefed the little low private as well, so he knew what to expect.
Were you happy with the RAF and the...
We were never happy with the RAF.
Why not?
Because there was nobody there. We never saw any. And when we did see them at Dunkirk, they did a lot... shot a lot of planes down, but they would be there, have a battle and gone. Where Germany, they were coming in this way, coming in, you know, they could never compete with them. But we didn't realise then that they hadn't the bloody planes to do it.
What about the Navy, the actual...
The Navy were great. The Navy, I think everybody in the Army took the hat off to the Navy. But it caused a lot of ill feeling with the RAF. I ended up at Cirencester and I was given a bath.